Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry to keep you waiting. We had a little bit of delay with on the speakers. We also want to make sure that everyone we could fit into the hall that is in the hall. So you're all very welcome. Second debate of the semester for Manchester Debating Union. Tonight's debate is this House believes that science has an undeserved monopoly over truth. We think it's going to be a very interesting debate. Sorry that's had to be rescheduled 3 months later. But here we are. So it's going to take place. On proposition, tonight we have Abdullah Al-Andalusi, who is one of the founders of the Muslim Debate Initiative. Abdullah has delivered talks internationally on the question of the purpose of life, the existence of God, the miracle of the Quran, the superiority of Sharia as a social and political system, and Islamic economics. We have Dr. Gary Kuhn, who is a lecturer in theology and religious studies at the University of Manchester. And to my left, we have on the opposition Dr. Johan Gilliman, who is a lecturer at the University of Manchester in psychology, and his research interests include visual search, visual attention, and methodology. And finally, we have Kerris Bradley, who is currently studying a PhD in information security at the Jill Dando Institute at UCL. Kerris has an MRes in crime and security science and a BSci from King's College London, and she was a European University Debating Championship semi-finalist in 2014 and the winner of the Paris Open in 2015, and has a host of domestic competitions under her belt as well. So please, a big round of applause for all our speakers. That are joining us for the first time tonight and maybe unfamiliar with the format, what will happen is each of our speakers will have 7 minutes to talk to you and explain to you their side of the argument. After all four speakers have spoken for their 7 minutes, we will then throw the debate open to you guys so that you can question them, you can talk to them about their views, but we'll explain more of that when we get to the question section. And then after that, we will ask one member of each side to give a summation speech for 2 minutes, and then after that, we will have a vote. So I haven't been handed the preliminary vote tonight, so I don't know what the voting section is tonight, so we'll just go on the final vote, so that's no problem. Yes, each of the speakers will have 7 minutes to convince you of their side of the argument. So tonight's motion is this House believes that science has an undeserved monopoly on the truth, and opening, who's the first speaker?
It's me, you.
I haven't decided. So.
Excellent.
Until
do you want to go first?
Okay. My name is alphabetical, I suppose.
Yeah, well, okay. So, volunteering, Abdullah. We're going to have Abdullah speak first for the proposition. Here, here. This is all very organised, as you can very well tell. 3 months in the planning.
Well, hello. I'd like to thank the Manchester Debate Union for inviting me again this year to participate in another one of their fascinating debates. I'd also like to thank them profusely for their continuing strong commitment to open intellectual expression and debate for everyone. Now, does science have an undeserved monopoly on truth? Well, does science even have a monopoly on truth? And if so, would it be undeserved? Science is a method to discover what exists in a tangible and tactile world by observation or assisted observation. It then busies itself mapping out what exists, what it is made of, and how it behaves. Nothing more, nothing less. The scientific method can do this by observation or detecting the effect of unknown objects on known objects, like a telescope measuring the movement of stars to detect the existence of a nearby black hole. The scientific method may use a microscope to find out that humans are made of billions of smaller units called cells, and that the behavior of atoms can repel or attract each other due to their charges. But if anyone thought that science can do all these things alone, they are quite mistaken. Science depends on a lot of underlying intellectual constructs to help it do its job. For example, science depends on rational thought, or call it philosophy, if you will, to tell us that observable phenomena that is limited must be caused. A geologist sees a rock and doesn't assume the rock is eternal. The geologist asks, what process or thing caused this rock to form. Therefore, rational thought makes a prediction, namely that something else caused that rock, and the scientist heads out to find out the details of that something else, confident that a cause exists. Rational thought tells us that if something happens when we initiate an action in an experiment, say I burn a piece of paper and it turns black producing heat and smoke, then my burning action was a possible factor in causing the paper to change its condition and not just a coincidence. Rational thought tells us that contradiction is impossible, and therefore if we see contradiction between a theory and observation, the theory is proven wrong. Science also depends on mathematics, whose axioms achieve a level of truth science cannot, absolute certainty and universality. Science uses deductive and inductive logic based upon the assumption that the universe is uniform and consistent in the laws across itself. Truth itself is not science, since truth is not tangible, but only a mental concept of what is real. The purpose of science is to discover tangible things, but the behaviors of such things are encapsulated in laws, like the laws of thermodynamics, enthalpy, entropy, relativity, etc., which are simply qualitative and quantitative relationships that exist between material objects, but not material objects in of themselves. The law of relativity doesn't exist as an object, but only as a noticed regularity between objects. Once the experiment ends, then the thinking begins, and the models and theories of reality are created, in the most cases, by imagination, in order to explain what possible invisible worlds could produce the results we see. If a scientist is lucky, he or she may be able to do more experiments to test their imagined models. Not all can, however. There are other truths science simply cannot fathom. Thoughts and ideas are not tangible. The mind isn't either. Morals, ethics, justice, and law can't be found under a microscope. Feelings like courage can't be found at the bottom of a test tube, although some people report finding it at the bottom of a bottle. Not sure what scientific experiment that is. Language itself cannot be detected by science. It is simply symbols which encode meaning, and science can't detect such intangible phenomena as meaning. Nor can history be detected by science, only the state of matter that can be observed in the present day. Crime cases can be helped by studying material objects, but placing the perpetrator at the scene of the crime at the time in question requires a bit more than just the CSI forensics team. Of course, scientists, like most of us, simply do not have time or resources to prove every iota of the vast corpus of knowledge that has been discovered by science. We rely on mass testimony of many scientists in very specialist fields telling us that they did an experiment and what the result of that experiment it were. We all can't see atoms due to them being smaller than the wavelength of light, but we rely on those using electron microscopes to show us approximated images of them, and then trust that those images are not photoshopped or produced by other misleading processes within the electron microscope itself. For most of us, the books we'll read with full unquestioning faith will be science textbooks, and that's as close as many of us will come to science without performing the experiments ourselves, and most of us will not be performing the experiments we read in science textbooks. But let me leave you with this final conclusion. We are debating here today to ascertain the truth of this debate topic, and yet there is not a Bunsen burner, microscope, pipette, or telescope in sight. But if all that I've said is still not enough to convince you that science depends on a bit more than just itself, then reflect on this. If you do not vote for the proposition today, then you must face the terrifying consequence that the truth of ideas cannot be tested by debate, but only by science. And then you'll have to change your name from the Manchester Debating Union to the Manchester Scientific Experimentation Union instead. Do you really want that? I mean, you'll have to change your nice logo and everything. So, does science have an undeserved monopoly on truth? My argument is, if science did have a monopoly on truth, it would not only be undeserved, but impossible to maintain. Thank you.
And the Scientific Observation Unit. Thank you for those remarks, those wonderful opening remarks. And I'd like to call upon the first member of the opposition, who is Dr. Johan Gilling, to open the case from his side. Here.
Good evening, and thank you for inviting me. This house believes that science has an undeserved monopoly on truth. That's the motion that's in front of this house. I would like to disagree, because science actually deserves its monopoly on the truth. And it deserves its monopoly on the truth because it uses the one method that allows fact to be separated from fiction. Experimentation. You change only one thing, you keep everything else the same, you repeat it over and over again, and you see what happens to the outcome. So experimentation allows us to establish facts. If you throw a big piece of sodium into the water, you will get an explosion. How do we know? Well, we tried it and tried it and tried it, and every time we drop a piece of sodium into the water, we get an explosion. So let me illustrate the power of experimentation with a story first told by Francis Bacon. In the year of our Lord, 1432, there arose a grievous quarrel among the brethren over the number of teeth in the mouth of a horse. For 13 days, the disputation raged without ceasing. All the ancient books and chronicles were fetched out, and wonderful and ponderous erudition, such as was never before heard in this region, was made manifest. At the beginning of the 14th day, a youthful friar of goodly bearing asked his learned superiors for permission to add a word, and straightway, to the wonderment of the disputants, whose wisdom he sorely vexed, he beseeched them to unbend in a manner coarse and unheard of, and to look into the open mouth of a horse and find the answer to their questionings. At this, their dignity being grievously hurt, they waxed exceedingly wroth, and joining in a mighty uproar, they flew upon him and smote him hip and thigh and cast him out forthwith. "For," said they, "surely Satan hath tempted his bold neophyte to declare unholy and unheard of ways of finding the truth, contrary to all the teachings of the fathers." After many days more of grievous strife, the dove of peace set on the assembly, and they as one man, declaring the problem to be an everlasting mystery, because of a grievous dearth of historical and theological evidence thereof, so ordered the same writ down. Experimentation, which in this case boils down to looking a horse in the mouth and counting its teeth, allows us to establish facts. Science even allows us to make predictions about future truths. On the morning of 11th of August 1999, huge crowds had gathered along a narrow strip of Europe to watch a total solar eclipse. So did those people wait in vain? No. The solar eclipse started and ended at the predicted times. So were those people in the wrong place? No. The path of the solar eclipse was exactly as predicted. Did everybody see the eclipse? No, because at the critical moment there was quite a lot of cloud cover and it only went dark. But please note that no meteorologist claims that they are capable of making perfect predictions about the weather. So, not only does science have a deserved claim on the truth, science also knows when it does not have a claim on the truth. And I would therefore like to advise the House to vote against the motion that science has an undeserved monopoly on the truth.
I'd like to thank the Speaker for those opening remarks, and I would now like to call upon the second member of the opposition to continue to hear from his side. Hearing.
Thank you for the invitation and to see such a fantastic turnout. It's certainly a larger number of people than usually attend my lectures. But in any case, so I'm asked here to agree with the proposition science has an undeserved monopoly on truth, and I guess I do, but with a little bit of trepidation because of how this proposition is formulated, words undeserved and monopoly. Mostly I'll be arguing that it doesn't have a monopoly on truth, but I guess if it did have a monopoly on truth, I probably would concede that that monopoly is deserved. So, science doesn't have a monopoly on truth, at least in the present. If it did, then it would be deserved. I think science has a massively important and indispensable claim to the truth, and that is very much deserved, and probably more than many religious theologians, philosophical pedants often admit. But it's not a monopoly. There are some kind of philosophical arguments that run along the lines of science is the only source of truth, that is not a scientific statement, and therefore it can't be considered true, but I'm not going to bother with those types of philosophical and pedantic things. So, in all seriousness, I think the issues that presently lie beyond the remit of scientifically verifiable truths are questions of emotions and ethics or morality, things of that nature. I'm going to take the proposition adultery is wrong just to illustrate. I think this is true in most cases, or maybe the majority of cases, and not because the Bible or another holy book says so. I think this statement is true because it causes a deal of emotional suffering to another person. A causes B. It's not a completely unscientific statement in its reasoning. Adultery causes emotional suffering, but it is certainly not deduced by scientific method of hypotheses, experimentation, verification, and so on. We might be able to scientifically verify this statement if we, for example, were able to analyze people's brain states and say that this particular brain state is suffering and that's bad, and therefore that's kind of a scientific verification of the statement adultery is wrong. But until people wear brain monitors all of the time, then we can't scientifically verify such statements, despite the fact that we might very, very clearly recognize that such statements are true. If we also base our decision on that statement being true by referring to brain states indicating a level of emotional trauma or suffering, then that also is not necessarily a scientific decision. That's another decision that we make, that this brain state is suffering and suffering is wrong. And that's the kind of basis of our scientific verification. But that decision to do that is not in itself scientific either. So I hope I'm making sense, despite the fact that I am flirting a little bit with philosophically pedantic things. Now, opponents might seek to discredit this type of argument by suggesting that the truth of adultery is wrong is not really a truth. Okay, I think that's an argument worth having. It's an argument I'd be open to considering. But it is opting to define truth in such a way as to support their own argument. And as a little bit of research for the debate, I did kind of look at the dictionary to see what truth says, and something like the quality of being true. Well, that didn't really help me very much. So that definition of truth is, I think, still open to argument. It's probably the crux of the argument. I think science, as I said, probably does have something to say regarding the truth of moral questions or ethical or emotional questions, in the potential for brain state analyses or in some other way that I haven't thought of. For example, it's wrong to stab somebody because we know scientific things about what that action would do to their nervous system and cause pain and so forth. But again, these are aspects of the whole truth. So I use an example If I boil a kettle, you ask me why is the kettle boiling? Well, I can say and make a number of true statements about that. Water boils when it reaches 100 degrees. There's an electrical current running through this wire and it's heating up some metal thing and it's heating the water. Scientifically verifiable true statements. But I could say I really like British tea and it's really nice. That's also a very true statement, but not one that's scientifically verifiable. I also think that regarding these kind of emotional or ethical truths more seriously, perhaps, these are the good stuff of human experience, even in scientifically laden disciplines like the health sciences. If our researchers here in the university discover that the scientific truth of the expression of a particular gene causes cancer or Huntington's, and they learn to solve that, it's actually not that scientific truth that we really care about that much. What we actually care about is the truth that this medical intervention will give us an extra few years with our parents or children or something like that. It's to do with the quality of life. It seems to be more important than the mechanics, the physics, or the chemistry of it, despite the fact that those things are really deeply important and do have a very deserved claim on truth. So, one last example, emotional strife. We might say that there are scientific truths regarding the scientific truths of chemical imbalances in my brain causing somebody to be depressed. That's the truth, but it also might be the fact my wife left me, my child died, something like that. There are also different levels of truth, and I think probably more important ones.
Okay, I thought I was going to be really clever and come up here and say that despite being the least qualified person in the debate, because I'm actually a mathematician and not a scientist, I'm going to use maths to show you that science doesn't have a monopoly on the truth, therefore we can't even decide whether it's not deserved or undeserved. But everyone sort of seems to accept that science doesn't have a monopoly on the truth, so that's the first half of my speech just out the window. Thankfully, I did have other things to say. And the second thing that I wanted to talk about was whether or not, if we could say that science had a monopoly on the truth, whether or not that monopoly would be deserved or undeserved. And I think that I can give you compelling reasons and some examples as to why, in many instances, when we can prove that something is scientifically true or scientifically false, we should absolutely rely on science as opposed to any other method. So just to kind of rehash the first half of my speech, what I was going to say, let's have just a brief chat about what it is that we're actually discussing. So it's been claimed by proposition in this debate that science is a method, right? And the reason why it would have an undeserved claim on the truth is because it's a method which is built on many other disciplines. The response that we give you in opposition is that actually it's not built on any other disciplines. The thing that we can say is purely scientific is that use of experimentation. It is use of empirical evidence, it's use of a method that you can translate to lots of different experiments. You can always ensure that you're doing the exact same thing. I think a really important part of science is also the fact that it's falsifiable, that you could come up with a different and competing hypothesis, you could come up with a different and competing experiment, and then you should be able to justify which is one of those results is true. So I think there are lots of things which we can claim to be the scientific method. So when we discuss whether or not science has a deserved or undeserved monopoly on the truth, the thing that we're arguing is not that end point, not that statement. It's the method by which we get to that statement. So is it deserved or is it undeserved if we say that when people make claims about the world, when they proffer their opinions, when they tell you things, that they are using a scientific method in order to make those statements? I have several statements here that I want to share in this debate that I think absolutely the individuals making those statements should have scientific evidence to back up the statements that they're making. Otherwise, they do not get to hold claim to the truth. They do not get to say that what I'm telling you is a true thing, a thing that I believe to be correct. So things that I think, like if science wasn't ignored, if science did have a monopoly on the truth, on the method by which we make our opinions, the way that we see the world, here are some of the statements that I think is wrong that we don't do that. So when Todd Akin, a Republican nominee, stands up and says that I heard that women cannot actually get pregnant because the body has a way of shutting down the bits that make you pregnant whilst you're being legitimately raped, I don't think that he should be able to make that statement and believe that that statement is true unless he can demonstrate a scientific study which is peer-reviewed and published, which demonstrates that what he's saying is true. When people tell you that having sex with a virgin is going to cure you of HIV or AIDS, I don't think they should be able to make those statements and say that they are medically true statements unless they can demonstrate and explain to you in a way that you would understand scientific evidence that that is true. When people don't vaccinate their children, I think that they have to have a better reason for not doing that other than a falsified study that was published decades ago. They have to have a reason for doing that other than saying, one of my friends vaccinated her child and now he has autism. Because that is not a scientific statement. That is not scientific evidence. That is not proof. And when we accept that that is something which is justifiably on the same level as a peer-reviewed study, a repeated experiment which has demonstrated the same results empirically again and again and again, science doesn't have a monopoly on the truth, but it absolutely should, because that statement and the action that was a result of that statement was harmful to children, not just that parent's child, but also children who, for medical reasons, for valid reasons, were not able to get vaccinated. There are lots of statements that we make. When Donald Trump tweets saying that global warming is a hoax created by the Chinese in order to stall the development of the manufacturing industry within the United States. When 50% of adults in the United Kingdom don't think that humans are responsible for the impacts of climate change, I think that in order for us to take into account what they're saying and consider those things to be true, they have to actually prove those things with scientific evidence. I mean, we live in a world where our government in this country is steadily rolling back the scientific advice that they get when they create policies. But we allow them to educate our children, we allow them to set the policies and the medical procedures that occur when we use the health service. They have so much of an overreach and a control over our lives. And I think that they absolutely should have to, where they can, be able to prove that what they're doing is going to work. I don't think that they get to say, I think this is going to work. When I was a child, I was forced to memorise a bunch of stuff, and now I'm Michael Gove, so I worked out fine. I think that they actually have to have evidence for the claims that they are making. So we heard from the last speaker that there are things that we decide to believe based on our emotions. There are moral judgments that we come to within this world that we just couldn't feasibly, scientifically prove. And that's one reason why science doesn't have a monopoly on the truth. And potentially in those cases, it doesn't deserve to have a monopoly on the truth. But I would claim that those things are not truths. They are opinions. You can think that adultery is wrong, but you can't tell me that you can prove that adultery is wrong. You therefore cannot tell me that that is a scientific truth. I think that what we should have is we should have a distinction between those scientific truths, those things that can be proved in the way that my colleague explained to you, and through the experimentation, through the peer-reviewed studies. I think those things can be considered truths. Everything else can be considered something else, but I don't think that we should be able to conflate the two of them. And certainly in the former, particularly the impact that those kind of statements can have, the damage that they can do to those individuals' lives, science absolutely deserves to have a monopoly on the truth. You do not get to pull anecdotal evidence out of the air and then make statements in a way that is going to harm or impact other people. And if something can be falsified or it can be proved to be true through science, then science should be the only mechanism that we use to evaluate that question. So for those reasons, I don't think, as apparently does everyone else in this debate, that science has a monopoly on the truth. But I think in certain instances, it would definitely be better if it did. Thank you.
wonderful remarks, and I'd also like to thank the audience so far for being so respectful during the debate. We're now coming to the open hearing debate, where you guys can ask questions to the speaker. What will happen is I will ask you if you have a question to raise your hand. I will then pick you. You're going to ask a question to a side. That side will then respond. The other side will then have a chance to respond as well. So all four speakers will have a chance to respond to the question. And then after all four speakers have responded, we'll move on to the next question. So we have plenty of time for questions. So if you have a question, please raise your hand. Jenny in the middle of that.
Okay, so you raised several things like law where science can't resolve it. But I think it's different to say that science can't resolve a thing and another field can arrive at an objective truth. So in cases of morality, ethics, law, for example, what questions have been like unambiguously resolved by a non-scientific method, and what are the methods by which we can unambiguously arrive at an objective truth to say an ethical question?
Well, I'd say mathematics for one, you know, 2 + 2 = 4, it's absolute, you know, proven, can't be disproven per se. There's many, you know, axioms in theorems in mathematics, which obviously, by dint of there being maths, aren't disproven. So maths is another, you know, way of grasping the truth, which is actually produces absolute knowledge, whereas, or objective knowledge, whereas actually science never actually alleges that it can produce true absolute objective knowledge. It's really just a probability. Science says that this might be our best model or our best explanation, but it could change, and it has been proven wrong many, 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 many times. I mean, scientists were saying that, you know, avoid full fat milk, it's not good for you, and then they're saying, oops, sorry, made a mistake, a couple decades later. And there is so many scientific advices that keep changing over time. But I wanted just to highlight a very important thing, that these horrific, you know, myths about women and rape by that American senator, vaccination and HIV cures and all these horrific superstitions that are in the world, we would concur wholeheartedly that science should be left to, you know, to deal with these kinds of questions, not superstition, myth, and bigotry, which we see from around the world. So we all agree with this. But the issue is not to discuss whether science should or should not deal with those matters. No, wholeheartedly. All we're saying is that there are other matters which science can't do. For example, what should we do on the issue of, let's say, people who are disabled or people who suffer from genetic illnesses? Compassionate human obviously, philosophies would say we look after people who might suffer from illnesses or diseases, or if they're disabled, allow them to have the same kind of life that everyone else should have. Whereas you'd have these nasty eugenicists back in the 1920s, in 1920s, including Winston Churchill, who said that such individuals, including quote-unquote imbeciles and people who are mentally deficient and so on and so forth, should be neutered because they would be weakening the genetic pool of the British people. And he wasn't alone in sharing that understanding of eugenics. So this is the problem where then scientists who might want to come into this and decide what is good and bad causes something really horrifically grotesque. So we have to watch out. And all I'm saying is science to the material world and philosophy, law, morality to the immaterial world, the intangibles. And of course, mathematics also deals with intangibles, abstract concepts, of course. So everything in its place, but not to cross over those boundaries, and not to say that one form has authority or dominion over all other forms of knowledge, because then you get that kind of, sometimes you get horrific kind of theories that develop out of that, and we saw that in the last century.
Yeah, to answer, the question was about what truths have we arrived at outside of science in the spheres of morality. I think there are a number of examples: racism, genocide, gender equality, things like that. We have arrived at those truths not by the scientific methods, but by, I'm not quite sure about how to explain how, but in forums like these, debates through legal systems, through arriving at some kind of cultural consensus. I think that's the first part of your question. The second part, are these truths scientifically absolute? Probably not, in the same sense that the absolute zero is however many Kelvin or so on, the probably different aspects of truth. I probably do agree, or I probably do think that science might
at some point, probably in the distant future, be able to answer moral questions. Again, probably through the analyses of brain states and suffering and a complete understanding of the human brain. But certainly at present, I think that's beyond the scope of science.
What position would you like to respond?
To the comments we just had?
Yeah.
Do you want to...
In general? I do think... Because I think the problem with emotion is actually in the use of the word truth. Because, as far as I can tell, actually it's being interpreted in different ways. So one of them is about emotional truth, and one of them are about physical truth. And I would say that whenever there's a possibility of experimentation, it has to be the case that science can be, will be, and should be the arbiter about truth or non-truth. The problem is, of course, with stuff like emotional truths, that in a way they're actually not that open to the scientific method. And in a way, so can you have a science of emotion? The answer is no. Is there a science of science? No, there's only philosophy of science. So in that sense, I would say that that science is a very bad way to arrive at emotional truth. And I don't think that brain scanning anyone will actually help that in any way. So when I'm teaching conceptual and historical issues in psychology, I always mention the mind-body problem, which has been unsolved for 2,500 years and probably will remain unsolved for at least another 2,500. So in that sense, I don't expect science to actually come up with answers about emotional truth. But what I would say is actually that whenever there is a possibility of attacking a question by experimentation, science rules.
Yeah, I kind of feel like we're not really even having the debate anymore. and everyone sort of seems to have come to the consensus that there are the stuff that we all agree that science does deserve to have a monopoly over, and that's the stuff that science can prove or disprove, and then there's this chat about whether or not science gets to have a monopoly over everything else. As I said in my speech, maybe we just shouldn't consider those things truths. Maybe we could consider them something else. We could potentially use a less loaded term than truth for the scientific stuff. Perfectly happy to do that as well, just as long as there's a distinction between what someone thinks and what is like scientifically proven. And I think sort of everyone's kind of said that, but in slightly different ways for the answer to that last question. So.
Does anyone have any unreasonable questions that will make a
yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay, so you're sort of saying that you feel like you're not having a debate. And I think both sides seem to have agreed that there is these issues that science can sort out, and scientists should be left to discover this and sort this out, and that there are other emotional truths and different things, and that they are completely different things. And I would really, really disagree with that. So you mentioned education, and obviously anecdotal evidence, actually you mentioned Michael Gove, is not a good way to implement educational policy. But can you do proper scientific research in education? Can you really observe it and experiment and get repeatable, reliable results when it's on people? It's about people, it's about children, these things are changing, these things change with cultures, change with time, change with fashion. So, to both sides of it, how do you respond to the difference, to the sort of intersection between scientific methods and things which also involve emotions and personal experiences?
So I think that the education is an excellent example, because there were lots of stuff within, when you're doing research on education, where it is very difficult to draw scientific conclusions.
And we use social sciences, which, as a mathematician, I'm supposed to mock, but actually have an awful lot of respect for, because it's an incredibly difficult discipline to get right. But I think that it's quite a good way of illustrating the distinctions and what we should be using science for. So a thing that has been introduced in education policy in primary schools over the last 5 years or so is the study of phonics and the use of phonics to teach children how to read. This method of learning came about as we got better understanding in terms of the way that humans interpret language, which was based on studying the brain, studying in controlled scientific experiments, which you can do in isolation of fashion, in isolation of culture, in isolation of all of those variables that you talked about. And we can learn one of the ways that the human brain understands things, so we can make scientific statements about that. What we do with those scientific statements then becomes less scientific. So when we design ways of interpreting the science in the classroom and using it to actually help children to read better, those kind of things, that's when things become a little bit more vague. So whether or not we should be claiming that the methods that we are using based on the scientific research is also absolute science, is absolutely truthfully the thing that we definitely should be doing, I wouldn't agree with that. But the first bit, like, there can be a scientific foundation, and then everything else is slightly more, I don't know, like, humanities-based or philosophical.
Yeah, I only have three letters. That's RCT, which stands for randomized controlled trial. Because basically, if you want to know whether one education method is better than the other, then what you should be doing is randomly assign kids to one or the other method and see how it pans out. Which in a way is the same as you do in medical research. So in that sense, I do not see any major problems with actually applying scientific methods to education research. There are a lot of political problems about that. You tell the parent, well, your kid's going to go... Actually, you don't tell them, of course, because it's double blind. But ideally... but you can already see the problems in actually implementing a scientific method. But so I would say, in principle, so science could do a whole lot of good work in educational research, but in practice, it probably won't.
Proposition: any problem with experimenting on kids?
Yeah, social sciences are a very clear example of the scientific method at play in educational theory. When you do translate that to policies, of course, as you said, it becomes more problematic, because you might be able to say, if I implement this educational policy, then the pass rate of university students will go from 50% to 95%, but then you still are left with these 5% of students, and what do you do with them, and how does that affect you? Just say, well, tough. But other than that, I agree.
What I'll say is, just to remind people, is science, again, doesn't say it can produce absolute or certain truth, only an approximation of reality that might be correct or incorrect, and in many cases is incorrect, has to be revised again and again and again to produce a more refined model that explains the data. So scientists would usually argue that science, we can't know anything for sure, actually. So to put up science as this, you know, panacea for all the world's ills is misplaced, but it's extremely useful in dealing with a lot of the world's ills, yes. And it has utility, much like courts have a utility. And if you go into a court, the judge doesn't take out a Bunsen burner and a test tube and say, right, guilty or innocent. No, the court, which is convened to pursue the truth of a case, they won't use science per se unless it's part of forensics, but even then that's only supplementary to witness testimony, for example. So then in that case, truth will have to rely on witness testimony for detectives and prosecutions and defense lawyers to discuss over. As for the issues of humans, humans have a tangible aspect to ourselves, yes, brain and body chemistry and so on. We also have an intangible aspect to ourselves, such as culture, feelings, ideas, mindsets. you could put kids from one particular culture, and according to your scientific analysis of tests from kids from one culture, a particular method of education works amazingly. You put kids from a different culture who might have a different mindset or a different way of thinking, and that particular education process won't work so well for them. And you've made a very generalized, universal statement. Well, this must work on these kids, ergo it will work on all kids. Maybe just to kind of go back to the example of my colleague who talked about counting horses and teeth, the assumption made to answer that question is that the horse being counted, the teeth being counted, that horse was representative of all horses, and that there's no variation of different races of horses, horses of different regions, horses of different times. And of course, if you want to be really philosophical, what is a tooth? So, which you have to go to language to give you a meaning, not science. So science depends on so many other things to give it its impetus, to give it its mandate. So all I'm saying is that we have to just be cognizant that science by itself, which is just observation and organizing scenarios to observe, that's all it does. Any inferences from those scenarios, you have to rely on philosophy, rationality, mathematics, or any other discipline. And I think the biggest refutation for the fact that we should depend on science for all our study needs is just looking at the courses offered at this university. They're not all science. And of course, as many of those courses are, aim to get a truth or study a truth of a particular discipline. So, of course, I think we are all agreeing, and I think we should put to bed this topic and concede that the science doesn't have an undeserved monopoly on truth. It doesn't have any monopoly on truth, and that's just the reality of it, and we wouldn't want it any other way.
Thank you for that question. I got a little bit of discussion, a little bit of non-consensus in the speakers. So, any more of those questions that will cause a bit of a gentleman,
So, if science doesn't have a monopoly on the truth, how are we going to answer other questions that can't be determined experimentally, that isn't just going to end in a way of people with very loud opinions being very loud of each other, that we can actually objectively decide who's right?
Welcome to the human condition. Well, this is the situation amongst humans. People will debate about philosophy, they'll debate about political system, they'll debate about political policy, and there's no way of getting rid of that. Yeah, actually, even scientists will argue about theories of different beliefs. I mean, for example, Einstein rejected the idea of a Big Bang. He believed in the steady state theory, even tried to add in these universal constants to fit that theory. But obviously, evidence proved him wrong, and you know, he was lucky enough to live that long. Many scientists don't live that long, maybe, to see their theories disproven. So scientists, you won't get them all to agree anyway. So disagreement is the human condition. But look on the bright side. If there wasn't any disagreement, we wouldn't have the Manchester Debate Union. So there you go.
Yeah, I think that's true. We're not going to get a consensus. And again, even in science, you have another aspect I don't think we've talked about too much is the interpretation of facts. So even when we have scientific evidence and verified truths, that they're still open to interpretation of what that actually means. So, you know, in evolutionary theory, you have a punctuated equilibrium and a gradual process. In these two strong fields are competing with each other. I'm not a biologist, so I don't understand the ins and outs of that. But it's the very same facts. You're looking at the exact same figures, the exact same data, and producing, you know, significantly different interpretations of that. But then in moral questions, yes, we probably won't ever. I think, to be honest, I'm a little bit more optimistic in that we'll never arrive at a consensus. I think on ethical questions, think that consensus is reached over time. You know, so 400 or 500 years ago, there wasn't a consensus against racism. 200 years ago, there wasn't a consensus on gender equality. But these things, it's not that these problems don't exist, they still exist, but a consensus emerges over time, again, through law debates and people arguing with each other. And so on.
I mean, so on the Einstein thing, so Einstein didn't believe in the Big Bang theory. The fact that he didn't believe that doesn't make that it true, like the statement that he was making. I think that's the distinction that we're trying to draw in opposition. So he gets to say, I don't believe that the world's, like the origin of the universe started with a big explosion. Everyone can say, that's great, we're going to go back to the textbook and see what science has to say about that and then make our own interpretations. He doesn't get to claim, and I don't think that he did, that that's a scientific statement. So the distinction there is between the fact and the interpretation of the fact. One is allowed to be scientific, one is allowed to be true, and the other one is not allowed to be scientific, and therefore, from what we're arguing on opposition, isn't allowed to be true because you can't provide evidence either for or against. So on the like idea that we sometimes have discussions about things and they get quite heated and emotional, like so long as everyone accepts the fact that they're not dealing in absolutes and they're not dealing in truth, they're dealing in opinions and they're dealing in beliefs, that's not going to bring you an answer, but it's probably going to make it easier to accept that someone else has a different opinion to you. That's obviously like not true, people don't think like that, but like wouldn't it be nice if they did?
No.
Any other questions? Yes.
Do you have
a question? Or
do you
like put your hand
down?
I was just going to say that we're kind of establishing, everyone agrees, that scientific process, experimentation, repetition, getting results is the basis, is a good basis of truth and deserves to hold the title of truth that it proves something. I was wondering, I'm going to open up to religion. For a massive majority of people on this planet, they have a truth of the way they live their life, and that is their religion. How come, but there's no kind of scientific process or proof or experimentation to prove that, but that is, for so many people, absolute concrete truth. So how do you think that science and religion can work together, and why do they not work together more to achieve concrete in religion?
Well, actually, I've seen a talk by someone who actually tried to find religious experience in brain scans, and there was actually no brain area that was correlated enough with religious experience. So in that sense, yes, he was an American, and so when asked why do you do this, he said, well, the taxpayer thinks this is an interesting question. And that's why I investigate this question. So I think the collaboration between science and religion, of course, is rather problematic in the sense that science is kind of looking for a mechanism, and in a way the kind of answers that it's throwing up are not exactly compatible with when you read, for instance, the Bible. So there was a huge amount of problems when somebody actually proposed, no, the Earth is not 6,000 years old, actually it's a few billion years old. So in that sense, I do think that there is a only very small chance of actually religion and science collaborating together for progress.
I don't think you need to have scientific proof to have faith in something, and maybe it would undermine that faith if you felt that you did, or that if scientists arrogantly decided that the best way to help people who had religious faith was, you know, if they really provided some concrete evidence to prove the foundations of that faith. I don't think that's necessary. I think you can have like competing worldviews, and if your faith is more important to you than like the scientific evidence that you are like provided with, then I'm not going to make a moral judgment on which one you decide to go for. For me, I would choose the scientific evidence, but that's because I'm an atheist, so it would be kind of difficult for me to rely on my faith, which I don't actually have. So I'm not going to make a judgment on, for individuals, which one of those things is more important. And I think that there are difficulties when those two things say different things, and we, as a result, have to make decisions, whether it be policy or whatever, on that difference. But I think it's fine to say that you have a religious truth, But obviously, if it's not a scientific truth, then you can't... I'm staying on brand. You can't claim that that's a scientific truth. But there's no that doesn't necessarily mean that one of those is better than the other for every individual.
Proposition.
Okay. I think if you were to say that religious people believe that their God or their way of life is the absolute truth, I think, kind of, not to put too fine a point on it, they're wrong. It's impossible for me to say that either Jesus was the son of God or the incarnation of a God, or he wasn't. It's potentially scientifically verifiable statement if we found a time machine or some other way. I don't know. So that's one aspect. But I also think that in terms of the religion science thing, it's apples and oranges. Religion, although quite a lot of people say that their religion is true to them, that's not what religion is or was ever kind of intended to be. So the example of the Bible and the 6,000 years old thing, if you actually read the documents of the church fathers when they established the religion of Christianity, for instance, they knew quite well that that was not the case. People just implied it to be the case and it became a kind of a consensus. But we've known, or you know, the Christian church, for example, has known since ever that the book of Genesis isn't meant to be documentation of the origin of existence. I think in a lot of senses you're dealing with apples and oranges in terms of truth. And when you say religious truth and a scientific truth, I think that's kind of a cop-out as well. Say, oh, that's a religious truth. Well, what does that mean? There are true things we can say about religion. We can take a sacred text and date it to a particular time. We can look at corresponding literature and documents and say this person existed, because we have a great deal of evidence that this person existed in history. I can say statements like Christians believe in X or Muslims believe in X. It's a true statement. So they're true statements. But it's, I think, to say whether or not God is Yahweh or another type of God, I don't think that's a... People shouldn't, or would be very arrogant, I think, to say that that is an absolute truth.
What I would say is, considering that one of the founders of the scientific method, one of the founders, Ibn Haytham, for example, a Muslim scientist from the golden period of the Islamic civilization, Roger Bacon, Francis Bacon, Kepler, Galileo, Galileo, who was patroned by the Pope for his scientific research, let's not forget, and he was never killed, that was a myth. For just looking at European history, I think you've got 600 years, almost 600 years of scientific development in Europe that occurred completely under Christian patronage, Catholic Church patronage as well. So science and religion there's not really been problems. The problems have always been between people with different theories about how the universe works. And so there'll be Christians who argue for flat earth and more Christians who'll be refuting those Christians who believe in a flat earth. So it's got nothing to do per se with any dichotomy between religion and science, because they're dealing with two different things. But religion, people think of spiritual belief, but I would say that the modern word for religion could be political ideology. For example, I'd say secular liberalism is a modern religion in the sense of how religion has always been understood throughout human history. It affects your morality, your epistemology for morality, your understanding of ethics, your political system, and people will believe that, for example, secular liberalism is the absolute truth, the best system for mankind, and that everyone should live under it, and they will tout that to the world, and in some cases use violence to spread that to the world. Of course, same for communism and so on and so forth. So, and of course, people could argue that secular liberalism has also had some problems with science. For example, climate change or the tobacco's effect on human health has been vehemently denied by very strong secular liberals or those who follow this economic system, capitalism, who don't want to stop their industrial developments, who don't want to stop selling cigarettes or see their stocks and shares depreciate. And so they will actively pay and buy off scientists to produce false science to show that tobacco doesn't affect your health and that climate change isn't happening, fine, upstanding capitalists. Right? So the question isn't about religion, whether religion impedes science or whether they can exist or coexist, because political philosophies and religion deal with one thing, humans, and human meaning and purpose, whereas science only deals with the physical world. And any ideology has been shown to both impinge and be a boon for the study of science. So there isn't any real kind of connection there and so on. And as for theories, people say, well, religion gives wacky theories, right? And I say, oh, really? It's just religion? I've seen an argument called the multiverse, and it's posited as the alternative to an existence of a God creator. So the multiverse, they say, is an infinite force that creates infinite amount of universes of every particular kind. And the person rejecting God might say to me, I don't believe in your God or God, like I don't believe in fairies, goblins, and unicorns. And I say, okay, but you believe in a multiverse that makes an infinite number of universes. He said, yes, of every possibility. And I say, yes, we know I'm going with this. So in one of these universes, there must be a unicorn. And another universe must be a fairy. And another universe must be a goblin. And so it turns out you do believe in fairies, unicorns, and goblins. Out there must be, inevitably, because there's an infinite number of universes. And the multiverse theory has as much evidence to prove it from science as Thor and Zeus. And yet you'll see it be called a scientific theory. Although, thank God, there are a large number of scientists who are rejecting the idea of the multiverse because they say it doesn't have any scientific basis. It's just conjecture. So all I'm saying is that the issue is not religion and science, but humans and science, I think, is the real question. Can they get along? I think that's the real question to have.
Right, I want to take one last question. It's from half an hour at the moment. So I want to take one last question and brief answers from all the speakers. So can I have the gentleman in the middle, please?
First, I don't think you know what theory means. And secondly, the difference between that person and the second person is the scientist is trying to prove or disprove whether there are multiverses or not. Whereas the other person making research that unicorns exist is not trying to find out whether unicorns do exist. So that's the first thing. And second of all, I don't think scientists or science ever made the claim to assert how humans should live or not. So that's like kind of the distinction between what I think between religion and science. Religion is there to kind of outline principles how humans should live, so usually based on desired outcomes. And so then if you see the principles of religion for that reason, I think you can kind of bring science into it. So if you have desired outcomes, you can say, do the principles of religion lead to the desired outcomes? The thing is, at the moment, religion doesn't actually seek to prove whether the principles do result in desired outcomes.
Okay, well, I think in one way we're actually agreeing, because I don't believe the multiverse should be called a scientific theory. But the problem is that people are calling it a scientific theory, which is why I have a problem with that. As for science not telling people how to live, exactly. Science doesn't tell you what's good and bad. The only morality in science or in the universe is the impossible and possible. That's the only morality there is. You can say this brain and this human is suffering from pain. Say, fine, but is pain good or bad? If you go to gym, you suffer from pain. Does it mean it's bad? So science really can't answer any of those questions, and it's left to religion or philosophy or political philosophy or whatever to actually deal with the questions of how you should live, as opposed to what science does, which only deals with the question as to what exists or not. And unfortunately, there are unscrupulous people under the name of science who try to say, well, humans have genes, and genes seem to want to be selfish and replicate themselves. And so therefore, maybe humans should live under a society organized by social Darwinism, for example, survival of the fittest, and of course, eugenics programs. So people have put science into the wrong arena, and of course, So basically, in a way, I think we're actually agreeing with each other on those matters that, yeah, I don't believe that multiverse is a scientific theory and that science should deal with what exists in the material world, and we should focus on other truths that will tell us how we should live in this world as humans.
Just briefly, I'm not so sure I'd agree with the proposition that religion doesn't try to investigate whether it's desired outcomes. I'm not quite sure if it's such, but religion doesn't try and discover if its beliefs will result in the desired outcome. I think there is, on certain aspects in some religions, where they people in these religions, you know, for example, in Christianity, if they believe that in certain branches of Christianity, if they believe that Jesus said something, then this is actually the word of the deity, of God, and therefore it's beyond question. But I think that's true, and it's probably true in some senses, but in a lot of senses, religions still continue to hold councils and debates and discussions and write books and argue all the time about things, particularly things that didn't occur or happen in, again, to use Christianity as the religion I'm most familiar with, things that never happened in first century Palestine, so nuclear war, climate change, these are issues which religion has a lot to say on, but we can't turn to Jesus or to the Bible to investigate them. So I think there's a bit more scope than maybe you're allowing there, but that's my response.
Nope. Which way? We're going to bring question time to close. What will now happen now? What will happen now is that one speaker from each side will have 2 minutes to sum up the case for their side. After that, we will move to a vote, and that will end tonight's proceeding. So we're going to have 1 minute of opportunity to 2 minutes to summary speech.
Okay, well, I think we've had an interesting debate, some interesting back and forth, interesting questions. I'd like to first thank both my colleague on the proposition and my colleagues on the opposition for providing some very fascinating, interesting, and very strongly argued positions. So really, just to kind of surmise this, I think we've all come to an actual agreement that science doesn't have a monopoly on truth, and no one would really want it to have a monopoly on truth, because truth is so much more broader than just what exists in the material world. And even science itself doesn't assert that what it produces is necessarily the absolute and be-all and end-all truth, because things always change and scientists are constantly disproving each other's theories. So really what I wanted to highlight was science itself actually needs to have a lot of help from its friends in philosophy and mathematics and logic and so on and so forth, in order for it to come with a lot of its assertions, a lot of its conclusions, a lot of its interpretations. Otherwise, science would simply be point, look, that's it. Write down what you see. You'd be reduced really to a data entry clerk. And that's all that science would be if you want to leave it in its purest form. Whereas, for example, the idea of falsifiability that Karl Popper brought in the last century, this idea is philosophy. The idea that you don't judge a theory by if there's evidence for it, but you test it by if it can be disproven or not. So this is a philosophy that actually came in to help refine the scientific process. Otherwise, scientific process is just looking and observing. And I would also finish off by saying that we have to also pay a lot of attention to the fact that there are many things which are simply unknowable, but like science, like, for example, you know, love and eating large amounts of chocolate. It might look the same to under the microscope or in a CAT scan, but we know the difference, I think. So in that sense, there are truths, and we can say truths about this. We can say a person can tell the truth if they really are in love, and they say, I'm in love, and there's evidence for that. We can see that. So all I'm saying is that we need to look at the world through a broader lens than just saying, let's only see the material existence, because there's so much more than the material existence. And what we know about the material existence is limited, and I think you should vote for the proposition that science does not have a monopoly on truth. Thank you.
I'd like to invite Terry to then sum up the case for the opposition side. Here, here.
In debates, I normally speak in summary, and the role of the summary speaker is to repackage the debate, to highlight the differences between both sides and explain why your side has won. I think it's going to be kind of difficult in this debate. But there we go. What I'm going to first of all say is what I think we agree with, and then what I think that we maybe disagree with. just so that you have some kind of distinction to vote upon. So in terms of agreeing, I think we have all agreed in this debate that there is a limit to what science can answer, provide an answer for, and we've delineated this as the difference between truth and opinions, the difference between facts and the interpretation of facts, the difference between observations and interpretations of observations, the difference between scientific method and non-scientific method. So we have lots of different semantic ways of saying virtually the same thing. My stance, and this is not a truth, it is just my opinion and it's not scientifically verified, is that I think that I've articulated in a relatively compelling way, as is my colleague on opposition, that there is a limit to what science can provide, and everything before we get to that limit we should only consider to be scientific. We should only allow science to interplay in terms of establishing those facts, in terms of establishing those observations. And then everything beyond that limit we should not consider to be science. So all of those interpretations, unless you're using a scientific method to make those interpretations, those observations based on the facts, you don't get to claim that they're true. You don't get to claim that they are scientific. So what we stand for on opposition, and what you should vote for, is that there is such a thing as a deserved scientific monopoly on the truth, but there is a limit to what we consider to be the truth, and up to that limit, science definitely has a deserved monopoly on everything beyond it, and then everything beyond it we should not consider to be scientific and we should not consider to be truth. So that's where we stand on opposition, but you should vote for us even if you didn't really get the distinction between the two sides. Thank you.
Thank you very much.